Going for Gold by Ferox Argentia. Summary. It's a completely serious, due south sports AU. Please note that, due to the author's unfamiliarity with actual sport, baseball has been replaced with welly wanging, football with cheese rolling, basketball with gravy wrestling, and hockey with bog snorkeling. You're welcome. Oh, and it's come down to a 60.35, the ESPN presenter yelled, as the crowd behind her whooped and cheered. 60.35, which means China has crashed out of the gold medal consideration. It's all down to Canada and the USA now as they go head-to-head in the last throes of the competition. I tell you, Phil, you could cut the tension with a knife. It's USA versus Canada in a World Championship gold medal showdown. And we've got all of it here for you on ESPN, right after these messages. Don't go away. Ben stepped up to the hockey, flexing his shoulders as he tried to block out the roars of the crowd. The familiar rubber boot was slippery in his grip as he paced the regulation distance back from the throwing line. He shifted the boot to his left hand, wiping his right hand against the maple leaf spandex of his uniform. The officials were still checking the markers, and he paused to wait for their signal. Weeks of competition, and it all came down to this. The last three events that would win or lose the championships for his nation. "And it's Team Canada up next," the TV presenter announced. "Benton Fraser throwing for Canada. He's been having a great season so far, with a bronze medal at the Commonwealth Games and silver at the Olympics. He's at peak fitness, no question about that, but he'll have to dig deep if he's going to find the mental strength to improve on his performance so far. Can he take it all the way to gold? We're about to find out as he approaches the welly-wanging hockey." Ben dug his toes into the ground, waiting for the breeze. The reek of hot rubber filled the air, mingling with his own sweat
and
the silicate whiff of sand. He closed his eyes, visualizing the throwing line, pinpointing it to the exact millimeter. His grandmother's words rose in his memory. "Feel the line, Benton. Feel the line. Only a fool needs to use his eyes." He hefted his Wellington boot, noting the rising breeze as it ruffled his hair. His awareness of the crowd fell away, along with the press of photographers and the television cameras. He stood alone in the great silence, just him, the boot, and the endless void between him and the markers. All was emptiness. The projectile in his hands no more substantial than the air around it. Nothing but far-flung atoms in the vacuum of space. "Feel the line," he muttered. "Feel the line." He clenched his jaw and sprang into motion, his arms whirling as he sprinted for the line. At 10 meters precisely, he slammed to a stop, his arms continuing to windmill around himself and his toes digging as he flailed for balance. He almost fell, and then somehow saved himself. He opened his eyes, sensations rushing back in. The roar of the crowd, bright sunshine on the white line under his feet, the Wellington boot arcing through the air. "And it's a textbook double-handed throw there from Fraser," the presenter yelled. "The wind assists. It's perfect. It's gonna... Yes! It's good! It's a great throw. 62.83 meters. A new personal best for Benton Fraser." The crowd cheered, waving their giant foam wellies until the stands resembled a forest of rippling green. Ben was still gaping at the officials as hands thumped him hard on the back and scalp. "Fantastic!" his teammate Turnbull shouted, flinging both arms around him. "Excellent work, Fraser," Coach Thatcher confirmed. "I'd like to see a damn Yank beat that." Ben nodded, ducking to avoid further thumps from Turnbull. "Thank you, sir." As he and the rest of Team Canada headed back to the competitors' enclosure, a man edged past them in the Stars and Stripes uniform of Team USA. Ben was surprised to see it wasn't the American number one, Ray Vecchio, but a complete stranger, a tall, fair-haired man who winked at him before jogging off towards the hockey. "A last-minute substitution here in the welly-wanging," the ESPN presenter announced, as Ray Kowalski steps up for Team USA. Here are his stats, and, as you can see, it's a big, fat zero. Kowalski is 5'11", 37 years of age, and he's never taken part in a single elite event. Talk about going in at the deep end. But everyone loves an underdog. Listen to that roar as he waves to the crowd. "Vecchio's been scratched from the lineup," Coach Thatcher said in Ben's ear, making him jump. He straightened, trying to make the movement look deliberate. "He's injured?" he asked. "In the worm charming, apparently. Team USA are going to have to field this guy instead for the rest of the contest. I've checked his form, and he's nothing but a rookie. I expect you to destroy him, Fraser." She hesitated for a second. "With, in the regulations, of course." "Of course, sir." Watching the substitute warm up at the Aki, Ben felt weirdly off kilter. Vecchio was a veteran of many years eventing. Ben had tested skill against skill with him through dozens of championships and World Federation tournaments. He knew exactly which holds he can pin him down with in the gravy wrestling, and why Vecchio had never gotten beyond bronze medal in the black pudding toss, but always won, by a nose, in the gurning. This new adversary, however, was an unknown quantity. "So, what can you tell us about the new guy, Susie?" the ESPN anchor asked his colleague, his face 10 meters high on the giant screen across the arena. "Not a lot, Phil. Like I said, it's Kowalski's first major competition, and he's been given entry as a wild card without world ranking to go on. But we filmed him practicing earlier, and let me tell you, he's no slouch in the welly-wanging department. One for the ladies, Suze? You betcha!" Ben blinked and deliberately shifted his attention to the Federation officials as they prepped the field. They were taking extra time checking the fence following yesterday's pitch invasion by a flock of panicked sheep. A protest group, calling themselves Men for Minority Sports, had claimed responsibility for the prank. But while Ben had a certain sympathy for their complaints about excessive funding of mainstream sport at the expense of minor folk activities like baseball, basketball, and so forth, childish sabotage hardly seemed the way to get themselves taken seriously. The officials were ready at last, and Ben sat down on the Team Canada bench as he waited for Kowalski to take his turn. With a podium position already in the bag, he could afford to be patient for a few more minutes before confirmation of medal placing. "Pride cometh before the fall," he reminded himself, crossing his fingers to avert bad luck. Team Canada had topped the welly-wanging rankings for years, with their skills honed by a lifetime of axe-throwing and beaver-chucking. But there was still an outside chance that a Yank could outdo them, given sufficient wind assist. Over at the Yaki, Kowalski unzipped his kit bag to reveal a bespoke welly in matte black rubber. Ben blinked in surprise. Not only did it look more like a biker boot than a Wellington, and in black instead of the conventional forest green, but it was left-handed. Not that there was any regulation against that, of course, but no serious competitor had used a left-handed boot for years. Coach Thatcher snorted. "Typical Yank. Showing off. Look, it's even got a strap and buckle." Kowalski paced back from the throwing line, his unorthodox boot dangling casually from one hand. Ben saw his chest expand as he took a breath, and then he was in sudden motion, spinning up to the Aki and releasing the boot over his head while still facing away towards the spectator stands. He staggered to a halt with his toes on the line, his gaze glued to the boot's trajectory. For a moment, it looked as if it would fly way off course, but topspin sent it curving leftwards again towards the markers, its buckle catching the breeze with a shrill whistle. "It's good!" the TV presenter shouted, clutching at her mic. "It's really good! That's, oh my goodness, it's over 60 meters! The officials are going to have to re-measure. We'll have a result for you any second now, and that's confirmation. It's 62.83 meters. It's an exact match to Fraser's throw, which means the U.S. and Canada are neck and neck. The crowd are going wild here in the championship stadium, and it's all to play for as we head into the last two events of the competition." Fantastic stuff there, the ESPN anchor boomed with the loudspeakers as the last of the previous day's highlights flashed across the big screen. Cheese rolling now on the penultimate day of the competition. And can the USA build on the success of their welly-wanging? Or will Canada regain their earlier lead? It's all to play for at the World Championships right here on ESPN. The crowd cheered, waving homemade signs and banners as the TV cameras panned over them. A few of the Canadian fans wore T-shirts emblazoned with Ben's name, but they were outnumbered 10-1 by Turnbull fans, who whooped as the scoreboard played the Turnbull highlights reel that had been running on a loop on SportsCenter for the last week. "Rennie!" Susie called, hurrying up to him with the camera crew in tow. "Rennie Turnbull, how are you feeling about today's cheese rolling? Do you think you can beat your personal best?" He smiled at her, exuding the casual confidence that Ben had always envied. "Well, I don't know about that, Susie, but I'm going to dig deep, go out there, and try to make Canada proud." He twirled his baseball cap and set it back on at a jaunty angle, winking at the camera. Behind him, a fan fainted, dead away. Susie swung to face the camera. "Renfield Turnbull there on his cheese-rolling ambition. It's looking like a tough field today, but Rennie's a fighter. He never gives up, and we've seen him embrace each new challenge at these championships with his own unique style. I can't wait to see what he's going to come up with this time. Back to you in the studio, Phil." Turnbull sauntered over to Ben, slapping him casually on the ass. Ben winced, hoping the cameras hadn't caught it, and turned away to examine the rest of the lineup. There were 9 other nations in this final heat, with 2 athletes per team, giving each team a fighting chance of getting a place on the leaderboard in spite of the punishingly high dropout rate. Ben noticed the new Yank standing a little apart from his teammate as they waited for the officials to finish preparing the cheese. The Yank had seen him looking and came wandering over to him. "Fraser, right?" he asked with a hesitant smile. "Benton Fraser," Ben confirmed, offering his hand. "Ben." "Ray Kowalski. Ray." Ray's grip was warm and firm. "I hear you're the guy to beat. All-Canadian bear dodging champion, 1997. Ben cleared his throat and looked away towards the officials, who were wedging the round of double Gloucester cheese into its protective wooden casing and hammering it shut. "Yes, although, of course, the aim is to catch the cheese rather than dodge it, so that's not entirely relevant." "Whatever," Ray shrugged cheerfully. "I heard no one ever catches it anyway." Ben glanced from him to the vicious slope in front of them, much of its steepness hidden by the hillside's concavity. If Ray really was a rookie, signing up with no experience whatsoever, he was either remarkably brave or remarkably foolish. And he didn't seem to be a fool. "It's very seldom caught," Ben confirmed. "Even if someone could theoretically outrun it after its 2-second head start, sprinting down a 1-in-3 gradient is the best way to end up with a fractured limb." "Yeah, Coach already gave me the lecture," Ray squinted at the officials, who were now wrapping colorful ribbons around the cheese casing. "Me, I'm used to running after perps, not dairy produce." "Perps?" Ben asked, surprised. "Perpetrators. You used to be security?" "Nah, I was a cop." "Oh." Ben noted the taut ropes of muscle and sinew running along Ray's arms, from his padded elbow guards to his sweat-dampened singlet. It was hard to imagine him wearing a police uniform. Hard and strangely unsettling. "How did you get into sport?" Ben asked. Ray gave another shrug, a more uncomfortable one this time. A case went bad, and an innocent woman nearly got the needle because of me. I figured it was time to quit, find something safer." "And you thought cheese rolling would be safer?" Ray laughed. Ex-cop or not, he really did have a charming smile. "Dumb, right? Guess I'm just drawn to danger." Ben felt Turnbull tug at his arm. "Ah," he said reluctantly, "I'd better, yeah. Good luck, Ben." "You too." The officials had gathered at the drop point, readying the cheese. As Ben took his place next to Turnbull, the scoreboard was already starting to flash the countdown. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, cheese drop! The cheese fell, gave 1 wild bounce, and started to hurtle down the hill. The starting pistol fired, and Ben lunged forward with the rest of the athletes. But the cheese was already out of reach, accelerating as it bounded down the slope. He slithered after it, flinging his arms out for balance as he struggled for purchase on the precipitous gradient. He slipped, righted himself, and slipped again. All around him, people were falling, sliding, tumbling head over heels like incompetent acrobats towards the fleet of ambulances waiting at the finish line. Turnbull was a second or two ahead, sprinting with the fearlessness of the deeply stupid. Ben swerved a few degrees to the left so that, when he fell, he wouldn't take Turnbull with him. There was a shriek above him, and someone slammed into his back, knocking him down. He wrenched free of the tangle of limbs and got back to his feet. Below him, he saw Turnbull skid sideways and snatch something from the ground as he ran. It was a pale lump, the color of cheese. "Turnbull!" he shouted, setting off again at a stumbling jog. He saw Turnbull raise the lump to his mouth, saw the rest of the double Gloucester bouncing onwards down the slope, leaving pieces of cheese and broken wooden casing behind it. He pushed himself into a sprint and had almost gotten to within arm's reach as Turnbull opened his mouth. "Turnbull, no!" Ben tried to grab the cheese off him, but lost his footing and went tumbling past, throwing himself sideways. He skidded to a halt a few meters away, curled into a fetal position. Turnbull was still sliding and staggering down the slope, with the wedge of cheese clutched against his chest. Just above him, Ray was miraculously upright, and his eyes on his stumbling feet. "Ray!" Ben called, waving his arms. "Stop him!" Ray looked up. "What?" "Stop Turnbull!" Ben pointed to his teammate. "He is lactose intolerant!" Ray's gaze shot to Turnbull. "Why is he eating it, then?" "It's double Gloucester! He can't help himself!" Ray hesitated, but only for a second. "Shit," he said, and then launched himself into a wild dive, smashing into Turnbull and taking him down in a tangled heap. They both crashed into Ben, who dug his feet into the turf and brought them to a halt. Turnbull tried to hold the wedge of cheese out of Ben's reach, but the petite brunette from Team Austria dashed past him and grabbed it out of his hand. "Oops," Ray said, sitting up and watching her go. Ben gave her a 3-second head start before rolling off Turnbull. He glanced at Ray, who was rubbing his bruised cheekbone and squinting at the trail of double Gloucester fragments. "Sorry," Ben said. "It's okay. Cheese usually fall apart like that?" Ben blinked at him in surprise. Ray really didn't look upset, as if being knocked out of competition hadn't bothered him in the least. 30 seconds ago, he'd been all focus and fierce determination, and yet he'd thrown away his chance of a podium place for the sake of someone who wasn't even on his team. Not that Ben wouldn't have done the same himself, of course, but he hadn't expected it from a Yank. "No," he said, "I've never seen the cheese shattered before. It shouldn't even be possible with the protective crate fitted around it." "Huh. Think someone tampered with it?" "Perhaps," Ben said, frowning as he thought back to the previous day's events. "Perhaps the same someone who tried to sabotage the wellywanging by opening the gate for the sheep." "Yep, my thoughts exactly." Down at the finish line, the Austrian athlete and the surviving competitor from Team Germany were shrieking and pulling each other's hair after a photo finish, while the coaches gesticulated at the remains of the cheese. No points for Canada either way. Coach Thatcher wasn't going to be happy. Dismissing that thought for another time, Ben smiled at Ray instead, receiving an answering grin that made his heart skip a beat. "Come on," Ray said, getting to his feet and tugging Ben up with him. "Where to?" Ray nodded toward the bottom of the hill. "We might finish last, but we're damn well gonna finish. I've never defaulted on a challenge yet." Ben tightened his grip on Ray's hand. "You're on." His heart was pounding, a sudden flurry of palpitations that he should probably get the trainer to look into. At least he and Ray were in one piece, and at least they hadn't broken any bones. Ray might be a rookie, but he was a smart one and a brave one. And his hand in Ben's felt surprisingly good. Ben glanced at him. "Race you to the finish line, eh?" dog snorkeling now, and can America and Canada come back from the debacle of the cheese rolling? We're about to find out right here on America's premier sports network. Ben snuck a glance sideways, his attention caught by Ray's Team USA wetsuit. His grandmother had told him wetsuits were for wimps, so he hadn't worn one until he joined Team Canada and the coach insisted. But there was no denying the appeal of tight, clinging neoprene stretched over a muscular form. Not that he was ogling Ray, of course. He couldn't help it if Ray was standing right next to him, filling out his stars and stripes in all the right places as he went through his warm-up exercises. Ben forced himself to turn away and attend to his own warm-up. He wasn't Team Canada's usual front-runner in the bog snorkeling. His teammate Turnbull had a natural affinity for tight rubber costumes that Ben didn't want to think too hard about. But the after effects of dairy exposure had ruled Turnbull out of today's competition. Ben tugged at his wetsuit, settling it more comfortably over his shoulders, while on the giant screen his pixelated image repeated the action 10 meters high in hypersaturated colors. "Nice pants," Ray murmured, leaning close to him. "Very Superman." Ben winced, wondering whether the exact centering of the maple leaf across his crotch was pure oversight or a subtle biblical joke on the wetsuit designer's part. Mercifully, the TV cameras cut away from him, panning across the other competitors. "Thank you, kindly," he muttered to Ray. Ray reached out to touch Ben's jaw, his fingertips leaving the skin, flushed and tingling. "You hurt?" he asked. "You got a mark here from something." Ben inhaled sharply. "No, it's just an old scar." "Yeah? From cheese rolling?" "No, from Conkers, actually. I was competing in a Federation Cup final when my opponent's string broke, and his niner hit the concrete, smashing to pieces. A shard flew up and caught me on the chin." Ray traced the scar again. "A Conker did this?" "No," Ben stuttered. "Not a natural horse chestnut fruit. He'd harden his Conkers by injecting them with acrylic polymers. He was disqualified, of course. But the wound left a scar." "Huh. It's kind of cute." Ben looked away, biting his lip as he tried to focus on the course in front of him. Ray probably didn't mean anything by that remark, or by the touch. It might even be a deliberate attempt to throw him off his game. Best not to rise to it. Best not to rise to anything at all, in fact, in a wetsuit this tight. Ray had followed his gaze towards the course. "That stuff looks like sewage," he said. "It's not actually sewage, right?" Ben blinked at him. "No. Haven't you done this before?" "Yeah. I mean, in lakes and stuff. I got the flippers and everything. Not when it's all brown like that, though." "That's down to the amount of peat particles suspended in it, making it opaque," Ben explained. "It's essentially mud, so you have to swim blind." "Your coach didn't warn you?" Ray grinned at him. "Nah, I might have said no, and where's the fun in that?" Ben couldn't help smiling back. This particular water course was dark, even by bog snorkeling standards. And the fact that it had been cut wide enough for a dozen competitors at once didn't make it any less foreboding. He couldn't imagine how daunting it must look to someone who hadn't spent his childhood training in vats of maple syrup, as he had. Ray seemed remarkably unfazed, however, as he pulled his flippers and mask on and tugged his snorkel into place. "Glur look," he said, and then pulled his mouthpiece out and tried again. "Good luck." "You too." Ben turned back to his mark and steadied himself on the edge of the channel, his flippers wobbling on the turf. "Team Canada and Team USA are neck and neck. the ESPN commentator was saying over the loudspeakers. And this final contest will decide it. Two lengths of the course with so much depending on the tricky turnaround between the two. You can see the turning post over there 5 meters from the far bank, which has literally tripped up so many of our top athletes over the years. You got a prediction for us, Susie? The anchor asked her. I'd say it's too close to call, Phil. Anything could happen here in the next 5 minutes. The countdown started to flash on the big screen, and Ben forced himself to focus on his breathing. At the bang of the starting pistol, he flung himself into the channel, diving as deep as the mud would let him and kicking furiously through the churning blackness. Onwards, onwards, his lungs starting to burn as his oxygen ran short. Most of his rivals would lose time lifting their snorkels above the mud. But Ben was the elite of the elite. He could swim through the pain and reach the far bank in one breath. 30 meters, 40, 50. He lunged upwards, swarming out of the channel and onto the turf. He staggered, half-blind, towards the turnaround post, reaching to slap it, already tense for the turn back to the channel for the final length. Hey! He heard a voice shouting in the distance. Hey, Benny, stop him! He hesitated, trying to spot who was yelling. All his training told him to keep going, ignore all distractions. But the voice was familiar somehow. He tugged up his mud-covered mask and squinted across the arena. His old adversary, Ray Vecchio, had vaulted the spectator barriers and was sprinting towards him, gesticulating at the channel. The other competitors had reached the end of the first length, the front runners already hauling themselves out of the mud for the turnaround. None of them had noticed the dark-clad figure kneeling by the bank, clutching what looked like an outsized battery with wires trailing into the water. The remains of Ben's training evaporated in an instant. He kicked off his flippers and threw himself at the dark-clothed man, knocking him flat, his muddy hands sliding on the man's limbs as he tried to pin him down. He gasped as something hard and metallic slammed into his gut, knocking the breath out of him. By the time he managed to uncurl again, the man had wrenched himself free and was halfway across the arena. "Stop him!" Ben croaked, tossing the battery aside and yanking the wires out of the water. The saboteur was making for the competitor's entrance, with Vecchio swerving to intercept him. Ben lunged after them, but he had only taken a couple of steps when a black, shiny object shot across the arena and knocked the saboteur down. Vecchio threw himself on top of him, pinning him securely, as half a dozen security guards came swarming in to help. Ben looked around, panting. Ray Kowalski was standing at the end of the channel, with his arms still raised from throwing one of his flippers. "Huh," he said, wiping his muddy face with even muddier hand. "Those fly better than wellies." Fraser went over and hugged him tight in front of the cameras and everything. Then he stepped back, clearing his throat self-consciously. "Indeed," he said. "Excellent shot, by the way." "Thank you," Ray tugged off his remaining flipper, slipping on the wet grass and grabbing at Fraser to steady himself. He nodded at the channel where the remaining competitors were heading for the far end, unaware that anything was wrong. "Ireland are going to win," he remarked. "So I see. They do have a lot of experience with bogs." Ben watched the Irish athlete struggle that last few meters and slap her palm on the finish line. It was much less painful than he'd expected watching someone else win. Perhaps because Ray didn't seem to mind it either. By now, a crowd of Federation officials had turned up and were marching the saboteur out of the arena to the booing of the crowd. More were clustered at the finish line, gesturing at the contestants and at Ben and Ray, their voices raised in dispute. Ray Vecchio came over to Ben, his expression a serious one. He said nothing, but slung an arm around him and herded him and Ray Kowalski away from the crowds. Once they were safely in the competitors' waiting area and screened from the television cameras, he turned to face them. "You okay?" he asked, looking searchingly into Ben's face and then into Ray's. "We're fine," Ben said. "How did you know about the sabotage?" "The Federation knew someone was planning something," Ray Vecchio said. "We didn't have much in the way of detail, though, so we went undercover to try and stop it. Looks like we managed to before anyone got hurt." He looked at Ray Kowalski. "You're the substitute, huh? They brief you about any of this?" Ray Kowalski poked at the ground with his bare toes. "Nah, they just said, can you throw a boot? Can you run down a hill? Sounded like fun, so I said, yeah." "Huh. Well, I guess it worked out." Ray Vecchio turned back to Ben. "I gotta go make a statement and deal with a bunch of paperwork. You guys gonna be okay?" Ben nodded. "We'll be fine. Thank you, Ray. And it was good to see you again." "You too, Benny. Stay out of trouble, you hear me?" "I'll try." Ray Vecchio strode off again towards the main arena, from which Ben could still make out the commentator's voice on the PA system. "Amazing scenes here at the World Championships, as Canada and the U.S. default from the bog snorkeling, and the gold medal goes to Ireland. We're going to take a look back at all the action right after the break." Ray gave a sudden, violent shiver and sat down on the nearest bench, wrapping one mud-streaked arm around his knees, his other hand going out to steady himself. His fingers and toes looked waxy pale under the coating of peat, and all the hair on his limbs was standing upright in a wet, blonde fuzz. Ben frowned. "Here, put this on," he said, taking a foil blanket from the table and holding it out to him. Ray shook his head, pushing it away with clumsy fingers. "It's okay. I'm good. You have it." "You're not good. You're chilled enough to have the umbles." "What?" "You're mumbling, you're stumbling, and you're fumbling. Here." Sitting next to him, Ben unfolded the blanket and wrapped it around Ray's shoulders. Ray made as if to object, but then scooted closer instead, pulling the blanket around both of them. He left his arm across Ben's shoulders, solid and warm and comforting. Ben cleared his throat. "Better?" he asked, in a voice he couldn't keep entirely steady. "Yeah, I'm good." Ray sat in silence for a while, his shivering gradually slowing and stopping. Then he leaned closer. "So, I guess now that Vecchio's back, they're not going to let me compete anymore. Not in elite stuff, anyway." "I suppose they might not." Ben hesitated, biting his lip. There's a beaver tail chucking contest in Winnipeg in September that I thought I might try my hand at. It's not a World Federation event, of course, but..." Ray shot him a wary look. "Beaver tails? Isn't that, like, illegal?" Ben chuckled. "If they were real, yes. They're a type of pastry shaped like the tail of a beaver. The aim of the sport is to throw them hard enough to knock a row of miniature Saskatoon berry pies off a shelf 15 paces away." "Seriously? That's a sport?" "It is in Canada. Millions watch it on primetime TV. It's big business. I'm sure you could find a sponsor if you, felt like going, that is." "Huh." Ray's arm tightened a fraction around Ben's shoulders. "September? That's still a couple months off. I guess I got time to practice." Ben nodded. "And you know what they say, if you can throw a flipper, you can throw a beaver's tail." Ray snorted. "No one says that." "They might do." "Ray raised his head to look around at the empty waiting area. We should probably get back to the athlete's village, get showered and stuff, before we turn into bog people. Probably. Ben didn't move, and neither did Ray. My apartment there is kind of busy, Ray remarked. Big team, not a whole bunch of privacy, you know. If you were looking for privacy for whatever, with me. Ben shot him a sideways glance. Ray was looking away and holding himself very still, as if rejection and denial were inevitable. But his meaning was obvious. I was allocated a room with Renfield Turnbull, Ben said slowly. But he's had to go back to Canada early because of digestive issues. Huh. So you're on your own? Currently, yes. Ben tugged at his collar, which was suddenly feeling restrictive. We'd have the place to ourselves? Ben nodded. The collar wasn't the only part of his wetsuit that was starting to feel too tight. So, should we, Ray got to his feet. Retrieving his kit bag from the heap in the corner, he slung it strategically across himself, covering his hips and thighs, and gave Ben a heart-stopping wink. Race you to the finish line, he said. Happiness bubbled up in Ben's chest. You're on, he said, reaching for his own kit bag. And may the best man win. This has been Going for the Gold by Ferox Argentia. Thank you for listening.